Ladies and gentlemen, we have a very special guest on our podcast today. But before we dive into today's conversation, I want to take a moment to express our gratitude to our sponsors for their invaluable support. This episode of the Show Up Dad is proudly brought to you by Tallman Equipment, a trusted provider of top-notch tools and equipment for the powerline industry. Visit tallmanequipment.com to explore their extensive catalog and discover how their reliable tools can assist you in your projects. Additionally, I'd like to give a special shout out to the Show Up Dad Foundation, an organization dedicated to supporting fathers in their journey towards becoming the best versions of themselves. Through their workshops, resources, and community, the Show Up Dad Foundation empowers dads to show up, be present, and make a positive impact on their children's lives. To learn more about our mission and how you can get involved, visit the showupdadfoundation.org. Well, today we have a privilege of speaking with Corey Jenks. He's a remarkable father who's embraced the challenges and joys of parenthood. Corey has learned invaluable lessons throughout his journey as a father, and he generously shares his insights with us. Get ready to be inspired and empowered as we delve into the wisdom Corey has gained through his experiences as a devoted dad, a pharmacist, comedian, author, and speaker. Get ready to be inspired and discover how embracing adaptability, excuse me, empathy, and human connection can transform. Welcome to our show, Corey.
All right. It's a pleasure to be here. I know I don't make it easy for you. I got too many things that describe me, so many adjectives, but the best one would be dad. So I guess we can focus on that and delve out into all those other things that I guess you could say define me.
Right on. Well, once again, bro, thank you for coming on. I just wanted to get this started because I'm interested. I want to know more about your life story, bro, and what motivates you, if you can share that with us, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so the quick and dirty life story. I'm recording live here from Tucson, Arizona, and I basically have lived here all but 6 years of my life. I went to college at the University of South Carolina. I am a pharmacist, so I got my pharmacy degree in 2011, moved back home here, met my wife in 2012. This is a fatherhood podcast, so had our first child in 2018. Went ahead and made another one in 2020. And then we have a baby girl that we had last year. So we got six, almost four, and almost one in the house. But, wow. You know, along the way, like I said, I started doing improv comedy about a decade ago. And that's something that really opened up that empathy, that listening, that communication. Those are great tools as a pharmacist. It's a great tools for a father, great tools for a human being. And I would say a lot of what motivates me, especially in my day job, because I still do practice as a pharmacist, in addition to writing and speaking and doing the comedy thing, is really trying to help people live their sort of birthright of vitality and full lives. I'm a big proponent of lifestyle for getting people off of their medicines if appropriate. As a father, I know my goal is to help my kids reach their full potential. And as a comedian, we all need the biggest laugh we can get. So trying to hit the fullest potential. Anytime I'm trying to make people laugh, whether it's writing a book or doing an improv show or a little bit of stand-up, trying to help others reach their full potential. And while along the way, I'm still trying to reach mine. So I'm humble enough to know I haven't quite got there yet. But always a journey and always something to work on.
Right on, man. That is so cool. I find that interesting because I remember as a young man, I watched a movie called Patch Adams, right? And the dude used humor. He used his ability to make people laugh to heal. And I think that's pretty cool that that you married those two together, you know, with pharmacy and
There's not a comedy. Lot of pharmacists that do comedy. So the bar is, the nice thing for me, the bar is pretty low as far as expectations of humor. But, you know, a lot of what improvisation is, a lot of it is utilizing that comedy in the moment with my patients. But a lot of it is being able to listen and live in the moment, because sometimes a patient needs a joke, but sometimes they need a hug. Sometimes they need a metaphorical kick in the rear. So what improv does is it gets you right in the moment. It gets you listening and it gets you responding honestly and accepting reality. The two words that define improv are yes and. We agree to the reality and we build together. And so I think that's a lot of what healthcare is missing. Honestly, probably a lot of what fatherhood is missing. And my wife's a nurse practitioner, so she's improv trained and gets the same feedback from the people she cares for is, you know, I don't claim to be the best pharmacist, but I can always listen. And that's something that I can always be there for the people I care for. And, you know, here we are as dads. I think when we're growing up, it feels like our parents never listen to us. So I try to be that great listener that our kids deserve.
And I think, everything you said there is just so true. Even now with people talking about leadership and all these different things, right? One of the biggest things that you can do is show empathy.
Yes.
Right. And part of that is listening, mm-hmm. right? Really hearing that person and seeing what they're seeing through putting yourself in their shoes.
Yes.
You know, and that could be with your spouse, that could be with patients, that could be with people you lead, your children.
Yeah.
And man, it goes a long way, because the bottom line is no one cares how much you know until they know how much you care.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I think that empathy piece, seeing the world through those other eyes, it's as a grown up, it's really hard to remember what it is as a kid. And mm-hmm. my kids are super young, so they don't have all the verbal abilities to express their emotions, their fears, what they're feeling. And so trying to remember and remember what it's like when you're a little kid and you're overwhelmed, and now you have a parent that's maybe frustrated with you and you just don't understand what's going on. It's hard. It's hard to take that step back. And for my wife, thinking of mm-hmm. what is it like to be up with the baby all night? Oh, it's pretty hard. So I better step up and do everything everything else I could do, because there are just some things I cannot provide as the guy. I don't have the plumbing to feed my baby all night long. So mm-hmm. I understand how hard it is. Well, I can't totally understand, but I try to, and I try to make up for that by being there in every other way possible. I know mm-hmm. that you had that wonderful episode about toxic masculinity versus masculinity. What defines a man? What makes you masculine? And mm-hmm. I think that one of the things that I do that might be atypical for a father, but something that I felt like I had to do once we had our baby, was I do pretty much all the other chores, like the cooking, the cleaning, the laundry. Not that these have to be the woman's duty, but I felt bad. Yeah. Like my wife's doing all this hard work. So that's one of the things I really emphasize to dads, and what I write about in my book is, you know, that first year with a baby, that mom is tired. So you better step up and help out. And I think empathy helps you put you in that place that you're willing and able. And I don't stop. Like mm-hmm. I apologize to her almost every day. Like, it's so hard for you. I'm sorry. What else can I do? And she does appreciate it at least. So that's a nice part of our partnership.
And I'm so glad you said that, because I mean, that's majority of the questions that I get, even from my apprentices and stuff like that in the trade, is, man, my wife is mad at me. You know, I'm tired. I'm doing book work. I'm working long hours, all this stuff. And she's bugged because she just stayed at home all day with the kids. And they fail to see that that's a full-time job as well. You know, they don't get no break. And for me, it wasn't until I stayed home with my kids that I got to see the other side to mm-hmm. to what my wife does and how valuable they are and how important and really honestly how hard their job is, bro.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and a little something unique about myself is about a year and a half ago, I cut to part-time. So I'm home mm-hmm. with the kids a day or two a week. And that taught me a lot real quick. So I think it's a blessing to have to be, you know, I'm home with them as my wife works. So I am doing that work. I understand that it is a full-time job. It is not, you're just hanging out with the kids at home. Like it's hard. It's a joy, and I enjoy doing it. And I'm blessed, as many dads don't get that opportunity to spend that extra time with their young kids, but it's a decision we made as a family. And it's been a ton of fun, a ton of work. Like just a couple of weeks ago, my wife had to go out of town for 3 days for a work trip, and it was just me and three kids mm-hmm. under six. And it was hard, but it was fun. It was rewarding. And I would argue it really brought me and the kids closer together, because none of us could turn to mom. Normally I'm the one that's like, the baby's crying.
Yeah.
It was just me. But it was a great learning experience to be, I'm going to say forced, but it's not forced into it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. How did mama respond to that? I know, like, when I stay home with the kids, mom's calling. It's like, oh man, do they need anything? Did they take this? I'm like, man, I got it, babe. Relax. You know what I mean?
I think the first couple times, because she'll go, she works remotely, but she'll leave the house. Otherwise the kids will just like find her. She'll text and be like, how's it going? Do you need anything? And after a while it's grown to a place where she, like, if I need something, I'll bug you, but I can figure this out. I'm a grown up. You know, I got a degree from college. I'd like to think I can critically think my way through this. But she's really great at giving the space and allowing me to grow there too. We were actually just having this conversation tonight that it's important for her to be completely gone so that none of us can feel that crutch of like relying on her, so that the kids get that experience of staying with me and not needing to go to her. Not that like she's there and she's loving whenever she's here, but it allows us that opportunity for all of us to not have to rely on mom. And that gives her, beauty of her is it gives her space, which she needs. It gives her a chance to, I mean, when she works, but she's gone out and had nights, you know, she got back from 3 days of being gone and realized, hey, Corey, you're pretty good at this. I'm going to go out Saturday night with my girlfriends. I was like, cool. You say in 2 hours, I did this for, you know, 72. Let's have some fun.
No, and it definitely gives them that break that they need. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Even a 1 hour, 2 hour little window where they can just have that me time means all the world to your wives, you know? Mm-hmm. Corey, how have you seen, now that you know, you're very adaptable as a father and stuff like that, how has that impacted your relationship with your children?
I think that that willingness, first off, you have to have that willingness to be adaptable. I think that I had a great father. He was very left-brained, kind of by the book, routine-oriented. And so when things deviate from that, he doesn't do as well with that. And the chip is not, you know, the apple does not fall far from the tree. I mean, pharmacists have a reputation of being very left-brained, very rigid. And so improv helped to train that out of me. Mm-hmm. What I find myself doing is I will find myself, when my kid asks me for something that is perfectly reasonable, but just isn't in my plan, I'll say like, I want to say no. And then I think, Corey, that's dumb. What? There's no reason why we can't say yes to that. Let's just let them do it, because you're going to lose all of your parenting capital for when there's an actual thing that we need to ask your kids to do. And so I think that's really relaxed the relationship with my kids. I mean, the baby, I love her. She counts, but she's just like, hold me, feed me. Change my diaper. But the 4 year old, the almost 4 year old and the 6 year old, I have found that there's been a lot less friction since mm-hmm. I've been willing to just sort of do what they want to do within the reason and realms and safety of parenthood. Like last week I was a chaperone on a field trip to the zoo and my son mm-hmm. wanted me to carry him on my shoulders. And at first I was like, well, no, I don't want to give you special treatment, you know? And then I thought, why not? I'm here. What the whole point of me being here is to bond with him. And he was tired and whatever, I don't care the reason. He wanted to sit on my shoulders. Cool, get on my shoulders. And it turned what could have been like a 2 hour long running battle of, let me get on your shoulders. No, you can't. Why not? Why yes? To, all right, he's on my shoulders. We're hanging out. Enjoyed the zoo. And the teacher liked it because he always knew where he was. He was on my shoulders. So I was trying to count all the students in the class. Well, the ones on, mm-hmm. on Corey's shoulders, so we know where he is. So a lot less friction and a lot more ability to have that space to bond.
That's good. That's good to see that, you know, because I know a lot of times as fathers, we want to connect with our kids, right? Mm-hmm. But we tend to want to bring them into our world instead of stepping into their world.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
And what I've seen is that men get frustrated. You know, I used to get frustrated too, because I want them to step into my world and do things that I want to do, mm-hmm. right, that are comfortable to me. And when it comes down to me stepping into their world, it's like, I don't really want to do that. You know what I mean? It's like, man, the kids, you know, it's, you have to also step into the world and also see what they like. You know what I mean? Get mm-hmm. into, know them, learn about them. It's not mm-hmm. about you. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. And it's hard. I think, right now we're in the middle of Little League baseball season, and mm-hmm. my oldest has been doing this. This is his third year. My youngest, this is his first year. I played in high school, not well. That's why I'm a pharmacist and not a retired professional baseball player. But you know, it's one of my favorite hobbies, pastimes. It's America's pastime, whatever. And I had people mm-hmm. ask me, "Hey, Corey, if your kids don't like baseball, what are you going to do?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to kick them out of the family." And they're like, "What?" I'm like, "I'm just kidding. No, I think I wasn't going to do that to them." You know, my world is I want to play mm-hmm. catch. I want to do this. Their world is we like the after practice snack. We like these little cool things about baseball. And so I've never forced them to do it, but they've organically found a way to enjoy it. They wake up, they wear their uniforms to school on game days, like they're pumped for it. I have not forced a thing. And I think that, as you say, like their world, they care about their little toy cars, their Legos, the snack. They don't care about turning a crisp double play because they're 4-6. Like, who cares? There's time for that if they want to continue to play. And if you can keep them engaged with something that they're interested in, they're going to enjoy it. They're going to have fun. They're going to keep going with it. And for me, that also means sometimes, like, I have an idea in my head of what I think we're going to do that day. And they say, well, I want to play this. Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we're going to play that. Or we can fight all day. The choice is mine because I'm the adult. But to what end? If we do the thing I want to do and they hate it the whole time, they're just going to resent me for it and not want to do it in the future. So, like we went, you know, we play golf and I take them to the driving range and my kids wanted to bring toys with them. Well, in the golf world, you know, you can't have toys there. In my world, I don't care. Bring your toys. If you're having fun at the driving range, at some point, you're going to hit a golf ball and you're going to have fun and we'll go back. So, and that's what we did. It worked out great. They played trucks. They hit golf balls. We all had a good time instead of fighting over nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's so cool that you're able to engage with them and just let them be kids. Because at the end of the day, they're kids. You know what I mean? Absolutely. Now, so we talked about, you know, you being a pharmacist and a comedian and all these different things, right? All these hats that you wear, right? Any tips for other dads with multiple passions and roles that you can give, brother?
Sure. Well, I wish I could say, here's the magic. Well, I'm a pharmacist, so here's the magic pill to take so that you get to do everything you want, be great at it, and also be present for your kids. Unfortunately, that magic pill does not exist, so I'm sorry for teasing such a thing that doesn't exist. So one thing that was a hard lesson for me to learn is if you have all these multiple passions, and honestly, the number one job, being a dad, you raise your kids, world's good, you fail at this job, the world falls apart. That's my personal opinion. That dads are super important. Mr. Comedian raising the stakes here, making it a little bit heavy, but it's the truth. I think that being willing to have whether it's learning to play an instrument, whether it's building a side business, whatever it might be, whatever you want that path to be, know that it's probably going to not be a big line straight up. It's going to be a slower build because that is all the time and effort and energy you're going to be able to have. We only have so many hours in a day. We only have so much energy. We only have so much focus. And one of the things that I remember talking about with my wife is I'd say in college, I had this goal and I was just like, do it. And then I graduated and I have this goal and I was just like, do it. And now it feels like it's a struggle to just take care of one thing on my to-do list in a day. And I think with kids, like you get one thing a day, maybe in my world. I mean, my kids are super young, so they require a lot of supervision, but I think having the ability to step back and have patience and grace with yourself as whatever it is that you're working on or working towards, if it takes longer, but it means you're a more present dad, a present husband, you have a like harmony in your family, that's worth the cost of that longer build to whatever it is that ultimate goal is.
Yeah. And I can't agree with you more. You want that peace in your house. You know what I mean? Because when you don't have that peace in your home, man, it is horrible. You know, you want that harmony. And I agree with you 100%, man. You can't multitask. There's no such thing, right? Something's going to give. You're going to suck at one thing. And, you know, it just doesn't work. It's not feasible, right?
Yeah.
So what we always tell people through our organization is be where your feet are.
Okay.
So if you're at home, be where your feet are. You know what I mean? Just be in that moment. Be with your kids. Be with your family. Turn off that phone. Don't be worried about work. Same token, you know, when you're at work, you know, if you work in these high demanding jobs, high demanding careers, or even just a regular job, if you're pumping gas, whatever it may be to provide, right? Be there. Don't be focused. Don't be bringing work or bringing home life to work and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Just be where your feet are.
Yeah. And I think that could be really hard for those, you know, if you have a bad day at work, and this is something we've noticed from our kids, like they're toddler. Well, they're not, I don't know what toddler, but they're young and they're going to have tantrums and meltdowns. And we find that at school, there's not really behavioral problems with our family or friends that watch are no behavioral problems. But with us, they're comfortable enough to have those big, like those meltdowns. Yeah. But the flip is true for us adults because we're generally well-behaved at work We come home and who do we trust the most? Our family. Who gets the brunt of it? The family. It's the least fair. Like, these kids have, it's not their fault that someone was a jerk to you at work, but you build in this, like, it's almost like a pressure cooker, and it like explodes because you're home where you're comfortable. And so that's wonderful advice. I think, like, living in the moment, and this is an improv concept. Like, you live in the moment. So if you were at home, you were in the moment with your kids, whatever Janet said to you at the copy machine at work, that's left behind, because Janet's mean words should not make you angry at your kid, because that just, that snowballs into your home and work suck. So let work be what it is. And maybe your job is great and it's a work utopia and that's awesome. Bring that home then. Like, bring those happy vibes home. But yeah, I'm not saying this because I've never done it. I'm saying it because I have, and my wife has called me out on it, and I'm glad she has, because this is the unfortunate pattern I think I see in a lot of people, is you take it out on the ones you're comfortable with, and those are your kids and your wife and your family. And it's really not fair.
No, it isn't fair. And unfortunately, a lot of people are doing that. You know, that's why I believe in talking about it. You know, talk about that elephant in the room, you know, and the more people become aware of it, the more that they will be able to hopefully catch themselves, you know, and be like, hey, man, I heard that on that podcast. You know, I need to be more aware of what's going on, you know. Another thing, too, that I really liked that you said is that your wife, you know what I mean? Your wife was able to call you out. And that just goes to show the safe environment you have created. You know, the same thing even with your kids. Your kids are able to be able to come unglued, for lack of better words, in front of you. You know what I mean? That means they trust you. You know, that that's a safe atmosphere that you have created in your home. And I think that's awesome, bro. It really is.
Well, thank you. And I think that along those lines, what helps with this is talking to you and hearing you say that makes, like, sometimes as a parent, you need some validation. Like, am I doing this right? Like, what is wrong with me? Because my kid comes home from school, they melt down on me, and they don't do it for anybody else. And when you talk to other parents, you get the same story of, like, yeah, it's the post-school release because they've been focused and good and following the rules. And it's like, when we come home and we kick our shoes off, we get into our comfortable clothes, it's like we get into our comfortable attitudes too. The kids do the same thing. So I think one of the things I love about that comment is sharing it with others, you know, other dads talking about this stuff, and knowing that you're not alone and you're not some sort of, like, terrible dad monster because your kid is misbehaving when they come home, realizing that's the norm and not the exception. It helps with that acceptance. It helps with that learning to know what's, you know, that might be coming. How can I get ahead of it? Or how can I love that kid through it versus, like, angering at them through it? Because then again, you just escalate, and now you've brought home that discussion with Janet again because your kid's angry at you and it reminds you of that thing. And it can really turn the precious few hours you might get in the evening after work into, like, bad hours. And you don't want to waste those.
Yeah, for sure. You definitely don't want to react. You rather respond, you know? And I think that's what a lot of us do, is we tend to react, right? Mm-hmm. And man, that could be devastating.
Yeah.
You know, well, especially when you're reacting in anger, you know?
Yeah. And what I find is one of the best things you can do is just don't react. Like, take a breath. Your ego is like, my kid is being a jerk to me. I need to show them who's boss. Don't let that voice get in the way. Don't listen to that voice. Take a breath and just say, you sound upset, and, like, walk away. Like, that's one of my big pieces of advice that I talk about in the book is you can walk away. Like, as long as they don't have, like, some sort of, like, dangerous object in their hand, like, take 2 seconds, walk away, come back, try to compose yourself, because as hard as it is for you as the grown-up, think of this 5 or 4 year old or 3 year old who has this much world experience. And if you're listening, I've made a little tiny motion with my hands to show very little. They have no world experience. They have almost no emotional regulation that they've learned yet. And as I'm saying this, I think back to instances where I've messed up and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I said that to the kid. But it's like, you're learning. Like, dads, you're learning too. So ask some grace for yourself. And, like, I own up to my kids. I'm like, if I yell, I'm like, hey, I'm sorry. And they're like, it's okay. And I'm like, how do you keep forgiving me? And they're like, because we love you. I'm like, all right, cool. Let's hang out. moving on, short memory.
And I love that you pointed out that you're learning as well, because a part of having kids, it's God's design, right, is to train us as well. right? Mm-hmm. When we lose our temper, when we're being impatient, and when we're looking at them all, you know, sideways and everything like that, right? That is revealing to us where we are still not perfected.
Yeah.
And God's using our children to change us. That's an area where God is saying, hey, man, you're not being patient. You're not being kind. You know what I mean? You're not being like me in these moments, you know? And it's a chance for us to grow as well, you know? And at the same time, we need to be someone they could emulate. If we expect them to have self-control, guess what? We better show them self-control. And that starts with us.
You know? Oh my gosh. Yeah. The two things there, like that, the fact that we're learning, but we need to improve ourselves for the sake of our kids is, I think, something that when I look around at other dads who are, and I'm just trying to observe, like part of the genesis of my book was being at the park and watching the other dads on their phones, flipping through probably some fantasy football stuff while their kids are like, look at me, like, you know,
yeah,
like, probably should look at your kid. And then the kid's going to assume you got to be on your phone all the time. That's what dad does. But also changing those habits and seeing that within ourselves and realizing, like, if I don't change this, my kid's going to have this bad habit. And not to throw my parents under the bus, they're lovely. They're great. But I look at some of my bad habits and then I look at them and I'm like, oh, they do that. And I can hear myself saying the same stuff they told me or the same things that they tell the kids. And it's so funny, like the drives home with my wife from my parents' house, who are amazing, loving grandparents, not complaining, blessed to have them in our lives. But I'll say, don't even say it, honey. I heard what I said, and I know it is exactly what, like my dad says, working on it, aware of it, acknowledging it.
That's so cool that you're able to pick it up. You know what I mean? That's awesome, bro. Yeah.
Sometimes.
Because it is. Yeah, sometimes.
She'll remind
me
when I don't.
No, that's awesome, man. So being a comedian, right?
Yeah.
How do you use that humor in your home, you know, to connect with your children and create a positive atmosphere at home? How does that work?
So if you were a fly on the wall, you would probably be very upset at the lack of dad jokes that I do in the house. So it's not just like, you know, cringy, eye-rolling dad jokes, which are great. I have no problem with them. I don't really roll with that. I think that comedy, and specifically the improvisation that I was trained in, teaches us to play. And so I think that the way I use that to create the atmosphere in the house is just one of play. Like, try to make everything a game. If you're picking up your toys, who can do it? You know, can you do it in 10 seconds? Can you do it in a minute? I'll play some improv games with my kids just to have fun with them. And then when I go speak to adults and I say, my four-year-old could play this game, you should be able to do it too, adults, and they freak out. I'm like, oh, I'm just kidding. It's a hard game. It's fine. So like playing, just being playful with them, I think creates a relaxed, fun atmosphere. And the thing about improvisation is that it does have rules and structure. And I think our house as a parent should have rules and structure. So we have some broad structured rules. We don't micromanage. And I think the other piece of that is this idea, again, of yes, and we agree and we build together. So I can't tell you the number of times we've been playing some sort of board game, or even if it's like a baseball game or playing basketball in a driveway, and they come up with some different rule. And the left brain Corey is like, well, that's a double dribble. But then I'm like, who cares? Let them run around with the ball. They're laughing. They're having fun. They're exercising. They're having a good time. It's really helped me focus on not sweating the details and the small stuff in the scheme of, are we having fun? Are things going well? Let's not mess with it.
Yeah, and it's so true. I mean, because like, and just using me as an example, right? I'll set up this trip. I want to have these memories, right? And I turn it so, because I'm a really focused person, right?
Yeah.
It's just my personality. So then I take all the fun out of it because we have to do this exactly as I planned it. You know what I mean? And it's like, you know, sometimes I got to sit back, like you said, and stop and just kind of reassess and be like, man, I'm doing exactly what my dad used to do. You know what I mean? I'm taking the fun of it. I'm ruining the moments. You know what I mean? And just being able to realize, you know what I mean? And have fun. Be that fun self. You know what I mean? Yeah. So
as you say, be where your feet are. And it's I love that example. I actually, in the book, I write about, you can't make memories. You can just make memories. So you can plan a trip. You can have this idea in your head. And I'm just like you, like, I have this idea. I used to do this thing. I'm going to take them there and they're going to have this experience and they're going to feel just like I did, which is great. And then you go and they feel something totally different. And you can either get angry at them for no reason and resent them because they didn't make your memory, or you can say, well, this is what this is. This is how we are experiencing this memory together. And one way will leave you frustrated, and one way will allow you to make joyful memories. So I can't tell you which one to do, but like as you said, you have acknowledged this, you're aware of it. And yeah, it's just like our parents would do. So take a step back and just say, all right, if you're the favorite thing about the beach is not going to the beach, well, so be it. that's what you want it to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that you said your memory, because man, when you're saying that, I just started thinking, I'm like, wow, that is very selfish, because you're right. We're supposed to be making memories with our families, but it's a memory that I want, a memory that I'm trying to create. You know what I'm saying? It's like, man, stop thinking so self-centered. You know, it's your family. Encompass all of them. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. And I can't tell you the number of times, like, we've been on vacation and I see that family and I see that parent who's like, we're going here. We're having a good, like, you need to, this is a big, important trip. Like, they're putting, like, the phrase my wife and I use is they put a lot of energy into it. Like, this is a big deal. We're having a lot of fun. Mom and dad spent a lot of money and a lot of time on this. And to a six-year-old, they don't understand any of that. They just know that I'm on an airplane and I want to watch a movie on my iPad. Like, that's all they care about. They don't know the effort and time you put into it. And I don't think you really realize that until you become the parent planning that trip. And you're like, oh man.
Yeah.
Oh, mom and dad worked real hard and I was such a jerk as a kid. I'm so bad. I'm so sorry. But I did have fun. But yeah, forcing those memories can really suck the joy out of the moment.
How do you think now, Corey? So can you talk about the importance of empathy in parenting, and how has that influenced your relationship with your children, brother?
Yeah. So I think we touched on it earlier, but I think that understanding how it feels through that other person. And I started with the wife. So for 9 months, you have this parasite leeching your nutrients out of you, literally. And this is our nerdy science talk my wife and I have. And she's acknowledged that we joke about it, but it's true. Like, everything that she's eating and consuming, part of it is going to this child to nourish this child, to grow it. And your reward for that is you shove this bowling ball out of you. And now this bowling ball is stuck on you for, you know, hours a day, taking your sleep, and which is, it's beautiful. Like, we want this. We want our babies to be healthy and grow. And my wife's a warrior woman. She's amazing. I outkick my coverage like way beyond it, but it's hard. And so understanding like that's hard versus being that kind of going back to that vacation example versus having that selfish, self-centered mindset of I see the world through my eyes and I need it this way. You know, I don't know, like, I need this thing right now. What reality is, you know, having a new baby rocks your world. So you've got to me, it really starts with supporting your wife, as a dad, from day one, because the baby, you can, as a dad, you hold it, you shush it, maybe you give it a bottle, but, and there's bonds forming. I talk to my children, you know, they can't talk back. They're just looking up at you like, okay, I need mom. Like, it's cool. But as they start to grow, and I think that my poor oldest son bore the brunt of my lack of understanding of childhood development. And my wife, she had several nieces and nephews, so she could see this. And there probably is something to be said about women just know this better than men. But I had these unrealistic expectations of him and his behavior. He's also a tall kid. So it's like, well, you're big. You should just know this. and so, like, taking a step back and understanding that through their eyes, they don't understand like critical reasoning. They don't have a long memory. They don't comprehend these air quote consequences I want to give them. And instead they care about the fact that daddy's raising his voice, or they want to hold their stuffy, or that there's the blue shoes they're wearing is not the right pair of blue shoes. And that's the only thing in their whole universe, because their universe is tiny, right? We've been in the world, we've traveled, we've seen different things, we've worked. Their universe is another visual for the poor listeners, a little tiny little speck here. And in this universe, the only important thing in front of them is their shoes or their food or whatever it is. And taking a breath, taking a step back, and not getting so frustrated when their world, which is this little thing, can be taken away because you throw it out accidentally or you give it to their brother or whatever. And when you do that, you don't yell at them. You're more patient with them. And then the whole world, the whole house, as we mentioned earlier, that word harmony, there's just more harmony. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, definitely. Yeah. There'll be peace that follows that. One of the things I had to learn was because I stopped, you know, raising my voice, right? Obviously. And started exercising more patience with my kids. Mm-hmm. And then I learned that communication is 55% nonverbal.
Yes.
And what I mean by that, even though I wasn't, you know, raising my voice or doing any of those things, I was communicating with my facial expressions, you know, and that is so important, especially when you're trying to exercise the self-control. You're telling them one thing, but your face is saying another thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, I love you or whatever. You know what I mean? And it's like,
through your teeth, oh, I love you.
Yeah. You know, and get to your room or whatever it may be. You know, you're communicating to that kid your displeasure with them at that moment, you know. And what do kids do? Kids, like you said, their brain capacity to understand and all that stuff's not there yet, right?
Yeah.
So they start taking it personal and they start thinking, man, it's me. Mm-hmm. Daddy's doing this because it's me. I'm something's wrong with me, right? And that's a seed that you don't want buried into them, because what happens is later on in life, it'll get watered, and then all of a sudden it's going to produce a root, and that root is going to produce fruit. I tell you, you're not going to like when they get into adolescence, man.
Yeah. Yeah, honestly, like, this is a podcast talking about my dad journey, but it's been fun. Like, I'm relearning as we go that nonverbal communication. It's, yeah,
huge.
You have no, like, you don't realize that your face is so stern or angry, or maybe it's not. I don't know. I'll just speak from what I know. My own rigid, pained, strained face muscles will tell me. And I don't know. I see it, you know, when I take care of patients ranging from like 18 to 97. And so I can see sometimes they have their kids with them. Sometimes they're young enough, or I've seen like parents and children and I, you know, or growing up and playing sports and seeing the parent and seeing the kids. Oh, I see it. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't do this to my kids. Little League. Oh my gosh. They're 6 years old. And there's already parents yelling at their kids. Very verbal communication that's planting some seeds of, I see these kids at bat, and instead of watching the ball, they're looking in the stands at their parent. And then talking, you know, I was on this field trip talking to another parent who's got a nephew who plays college baseball. He's a pitcher. And this guy's playing a Division I big school, and he's looking at his dad in the stands. And his dad's like making faces, showing that his displeasure. This guy is throwing 97 miles an hour, playing at the highest level of college baseball there is, and that's still there. And that, she talks about how his like worry of disappointing his dad is there. And I, and you know, fortunately for me, I wasn't a great athlete. My dad was, but he never had those expectations. So it just allowed me that space to play. And that's, I mean, this is getting very specific, but I think you can generalize it to any sort of activity your kid's doing, is instead of giving that rigid high expectation, is give them that space to play, to grow, to have make mistakes, and don't even react to the you know, they strike out, whatever, who cares? Like, are you having fun playing hard? And this could be an instrument. Oh, did you practice? Did you learn something today? Great. All of it works as long as you're showing that loving support through it. And it's hard. I find myself in those moments on the field, like, oh, just like watch the ball, or you're swinging a little late, man. But like, I fight against it and just realize he's six, and the seed I plant now of yelling at him or overcorrecting him is going to be much worse than if I just keep my mouth shut, keep him having fun. And when he's twice this age, there's more capacity, as we talk about, that developmental ability to adjust. And right now it's, I like wearing batting gloves and eye black. Great. Go have fun. Swing the bat, Harry. Like, who cares?
Yeah. You're not hurting anybody. You know, go have fun, man. Be a kid. You know, it's crazy because I have friends, you know, and they're like super, super serious with their kids about this and this and this, and they got to do this. And I get it. I understand they really care about their children. They want them to succeed, but not at the cost of the relationship with their child.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, Absolutely. Like, even within the T-ball world, like, we had a parent who said, you know, I grew up and we took sports very seriously and we'll do the same for our kid. I'm like, the dude's four. You know, I look at the poor kid's face. He's like miserable. He's 4 years old looking at his parents after every swing. And like, kid's a good athlete. Yeah, I understand like our job is to make sure our kids or try to get them to fulfill their greatest potential. But too many people, and this could be a sport, it could be an instrument, it could be any sort of pursuit that the parent is the clear driver of. At some point, that kid is going to grow up and burn out and probably resent the parent for pushing them. Whereas the parent, in the parent's mind, the lack of empathy is like, oh, they're going to love me because I pushed them so hard to be the best they could be. And I'm like, that kid is going to rebel so hard. They're going to hate this sport by the time they're 18, and they're going to wish they never played it. And the price that they're paying for that elite level of skill is this terrible relationship. And I wish the best for my kids athletically. Unfortunately, I've seen their parents and the genetic hand they're going to be dealt. So who knows what their ceiling will be, but as long as we can have some enjoyment along the way, that's what matters. I think you cut out for a second. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, I can't agree with you more, brother. It's crazy that that we take it as parents, we take it to that level. You know, I like what you said though about the narrative, you know, about talking about, oh, these kids are going to love me. You know what I mean? And it's crazy because I know from just even talking to some people that I know, that's the narrative that they tell themselves, and you're deceiving yourself. You know what I mean? You really are. You know, you're thinking, oh yeah, I'm doing this for them, but are you really doing it for them at that moment?
it feels like there's this direct, like these kids are a direct reflection of the parent. The parents take it personally. Like this kid is a little like carbon copy of my success and my, like that parent sees like their kid's success as their own success. And listen, I hope that in 20 years, 25, 30 years, my kids look back, they still love us. We have a great relationship, but I'd be deluding myself to assume that because I'm doing X, Y, or Z for them today, they're going to love me for that. Like there's so much beyond our control and so much that can change over time. Circling it back here to this ability to adapt. At some point, what I'm doing for my kids might not be what they need, and they might need something else, a different approach, a different attitude. I don't know. And we don't know the future. I don't know about you, but my dad crystal ball's broke and it's in the shop and they said it's going to cost too much to fix. So I don't know what's going to be happening. So all I can do is do my best in the moment. I think a big part with me is I might have a blind spot. So I talk to my wife, I'll talk to other dads, run these scenarios by them. Like, do you think I'm crazy for thinking this or doing that? And adjust the best we can. And if you're making an earnest effort, that's all we can ask as a dad. Like self-reflection, earnest effort, and adjusting and trying our best. That's at the end of the day, at the end of a kid's childhood, that's all that we can reasonably ask of ourselves, of our, you know, I look at my parents, they did the best they could with the scenario and world that they brought me up in. No resentment towards what I wish they would have done because they had their own challenges. We'll have our own challenges. And all we can do is give our best and ask for forgiveness for whatever we screw them up.
Yes, absolutely. Ask for forgiveness because we're going to make mistakes, right? That's what I, you know, through our own, our ministry on parenting and even our marriage ministries, that's one of the number one things that we always tell, you know, spouses or parents, you know, you're going to make mistakes. When you make mistakes, be quick to go and ask for forgiveness. Don't tell them you're sorry because, you know, you're not sorry, you know. Go ask for forgiveness, right? Yeah. Let them know that you acknowledge where you made a mistake. Let them know you're human. Ask for forgiveness and then move on from there. You know what I mean? And work to get better. You know, that's how healing takes place. You know, whenever we create these wounds in our children through yelling at them, through misrepresenting God in that moment, whatever, it's like taking a sword, right? This big old cleaver. And you slice their little heart into pieces. And what happens is that with that wound that you created in them, it starts to fester and it starts to turn and it gets hardened. And that's something you don't want with your children.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that quick forgiveness, and then, in fairness, you ask for forgiveness, and then you better start correcting your own behavior.
Yes.
Because that patience of forgiveness is going to run out at some point. So I think I love the forgiveness piece, but because I've been in those scenarios with friends, family, et cetera, where they ask for forgiveness, but they keep doing the same things.
Yeah.
And at some point, it just becomes untenable. So
yep.
I'll throw that little piece in there.
Absolutely. You confess it. You repent. You ask for forgiveness. Yeah, those three, that's the, you know, we talked about a secret code to parenting, whatever. Those are the three things right there. Confess, repent, ask for forgiveness, brother.
Yeah.
Move
may
on.
Not be any, right? May not be as complicated as they'll make it out to be.
Yeah, exactly. Now, in your book, you talk about the power of like human connection. I know that's super big right now. I heard on another podcast that a human's deepest need is to feel love and connection, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that the highest form of punishment that you can give a human being is isolation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. With that being said, how do you foster strong connections with your children and create that sense of belonging in your family?
I think there's a few ways we go about it. We spend a lot of time together. Like I said, I'm blessed to be able to be with them 3 to 4 days a week versus the typical maybe 2 days a week if you're working a Monday through Friday type schedule. So just being around them because they literally can't be isolated because I'm there. So whether they always like it or not, I'm around and my wife's around. So I think that's one. I think two, going back to that wonderful quote, the one that I'll butcher, but wherever your feet are, let you be there, or however I've messed that up.
Yeah.
Our son made a comment. He said, one of my friends was saying how his mom's always on her phone. And I asked him, are mommy and daddy on our phone all the time? He's like, no. I'm like, cool. All right. We're present. When we're there with them. And, you know, of course, you know, as we record this, we're trying to get them to bed. So they terrible example tonight. But I think that the connection is one, being present when we're there. We also do stuff together. We do stuff as a family. We have expectations of each other. So we'll do house projects together, yard projects together. We're playing Little League and the two brothers are on the same team. So they're helping each other out. And I think that for us, we like to get outside and be active. So it's doing any of these things together in an active role, not like a passive consumption type thing where you're just watching a movie all the time. It's let's go outside and they're like, we want to play with the rocks. I'm like, great, go turn rocks over, paint them, do whatever you want. Just create your world. And we just play together.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that by playing with them like that and taking them outside and stuff like that, you're instilling confidence and a growth mindset to them?
Yeah, because you're asking them to do things. And then sometimes it's hard. And then they keep trying. And then when they do get that, when they get it down, it feels great. And I think that this idea of a growth mindset, so I'm going to... We talked about how we give up our egos as parents. I'm gonna turn it back on myself for a little bit. I'm gonna give myself a little bit of credit here. This idea of a growth mindset is like we don't limit ourselves and there's no self-limiting beliefs. And I don't know how many times I heard growing up, Corey, you can do whatever you want. You can be whatever you want to be. And I had parents that were both teachers. They didn't always love their job. I had a grandfather, super close with him, loved him to death. He and I were just super tight. And he was a lawyer, but he hated being a lawyer. And he told me that. He wanted to coach baseball, but he did this job anyway that he didn't like. But he said, Corey, you go do what you want to be happy. Well, that messes with your head. How many parents are miserable and don't have a purpose in life, but are just giving their kids lip service? Well, so for me, it was, you know, a couple of years ago, daddy works less. I want to spend more time with you. I'm going to have more time to write, to do comedy, to go speak. My son started, air quote, writing a book on his little old computer that we let him like type on. Why are you doing that? Well, daddy has a book. I want to do a book. Like, so fostering a growth mindset to me is you got to show it. Like if you are not yourself living the idea of a growth mindset and taking the steps in your own life, then your kids will see right through it. So this is not an easy thing to do. trust me, I look at the number of books I've sold. It's not always fun to look at, but I'm trying and I want my kids to try. And if I never try and I tell my kids to try, it's not fair to them because daddy would be lying and I wouldn't be doing what I'm asking them to do. So I think a true leader is of a family, of an organization, is one that will do the thing that they're asking of their subordinates or I hate the word subordinates, but it's the only thing I can think of right now. The people that they're leading. If you will do the thing that you're asking of them, they will do the thing that you're asking of them. And so that's, you know, personally, that's sort of the mission I'm on right now, is trying to do this thing that I find a passion in, that I love to do, that is not quite enough to pay the bills yet, but it is showing them that daddy has a dream. He's going for it. I want you to not limit yourself to what you think is the safe bet, or what you might be. Figure out what you want out of life, and then to take the steps, versus sitting around on the sidelines wishing you could have done that. Because I can't tell you the number of friends, people I come across that just, they didn't follow anything, and they sort of drift through life, and it makes me so sad, and I would not want that for my kids.
Yeah, I remember my old man, he used to always tell me, he'd be like, man, he's like, whenever you see that bus coming, you better be on it, because it's going to leave you.
Yeah.
You know, and that used to stick with me. Yeah, you know, that stuck with me even till now. And I use that same saying with my daughter, who's graduating this year. It's like, honey, you know, that bus is going to leave you if you don't get on it. You know, don't be waiting. You know, don't be that person who sits there thinking, oh, there's always tomorrow. There's always tomorrow, you know, because tomorrow may not come. You know, we never know.
And as I get older, I realize that that the end of that ride is getting closer and closer. And I think that's the thing that gives you a sense of urgency as you start heading towards, I won't speak for all your listeners, but as I start heading towards the middle age of life, like, oh man, those carefree youthful days that went on forever are gone. I need to get to it. And now I have the responsibility of being a husband and father too, which is great. There's no resentment, but going back to the advice for the man with the many passions is that road's going to be a little bit longer and winding if you're doing it right as a family man. And that's, I'm gladly accepting that winding, fun, slower path, because it means I'm there for my family along the way and enjoying that journey more, versus that single-minded focus I might've had when I was 19 years old, going to pharmacy school and just with this very clear goal and zero responsibility, versus now you have huge responsibility.
How, like, now in your family, because I know you're a pharmacist and you talked a little bit about, you know, pharmacy and how you want to help people and all this different stuff. I know a big thing for a lot of our listeners now is Western medicine. You know, I talk to a lot of guys who think that Western medicine has failed them, you know, and that's just through their own experience, right? Because experience speaks volumes, right? What have you seen as far as that goes and stuff like
we're,
that?
We're heading towards the end of this hour. You're going to wind me right back up again. So here's what I will say. Okay. That what my specific job is, I do diabetes and obesity in a clinic. So that's, nothing has failed Western medicine more than managing chronic illnesses in a way where people are chronically taking medicines for blood pressure, blood sugar issues. One of my sort of tenets as a father is to get yourself in as great a shape as possible through your diet, exercise, your own stress management, spiritual path, whatever that takes you, that's important. Now, if you have an infection, if you have a heart attack, like you need an intervention right away, Western medicine is very useful, but you can heal yourself so much, by eating cleaner, getting the needed exercise and physical activity, and managing your stress and getting the right sleep. And as a dad, I hear you. It's not always easy. You're stressed. Your kids are up all night. But here's one of my biggest dad pet peeves, where you get near the end here, is when I have a patient who says, well, I eat junk food, but we keep it in the house because we have kids. Why do the kids get it? Why are you feeding them that? Why? Like, that's a terrible excuse. That is not a reason. So you go back to that growth mindset, be the example for your child, be the example for your kids. This is a whole pillar that my wife, because she works in the same realm as I do. So this is probably our biggest parental hill that we die on is trying to nourish our kids as well as possible, be as physically active as possible. And yeah, that's a mildly vague answer in a short period of time. So respect the time on that one, but. That's my best advice is get yourself in as good a shape as possible and do as much as you can on your own. And if you need Western medicine, it's there, but a lot can be fixed through lifestyle.
Well, Right on, Corey. Thank you so much for just sharing what you do to be successful as a father, as a comedian, as an author, as a coach, all these different hats you wear. I appreciate you. And, you know, our audience is just going to be blessed just being able to hear all your insights, man. So we thank you, brother.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This was a very, very fast hour-ish that we talked. Talking with someone such as yourself, sort of on the other side of parenting, having a child graduating, whereas mine is we're doing kindergarten promotion like in 2 weeks. So it's a very different season of life. But it's fun. I love talking about it. I love writing about it. The book, if you're interested listening, is called I Guess I'm a Dad Now, a humorous handbook for newish dads who don't want to suck. Here, hold it up here for you. It's a dad guide for the new dad. It's funny. It's fun. It's a handbook you can go back to again and again. It's a book I wrote for me, honestly. I've had so many times where my wife's like, read your own book. I'm like, oh, good point, honey. So it'll give you some tactical tips to make that first 5 years or so a little bit smoother. It's never going to be a smooth ride, but you can make it a little bit less rocky, and you'll laugh a couple times too.
Well, once again, brother, thank you so much, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Thank you.